All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for the fearless Dave Dubois. And have you ever turned setbacks into stepping stones? Today, my guest, Josh Poitras. I probably messed that up. It's either the English or the French one, and he'll correct me when I'm done here. But he's mastered the art of learning the hard way from house hacking to raising capital. Josh's journey is a lesson in resilience. Welcome to the show, Josh. And I apologize for chopping up your last name with my best attempt at it. But
yeah,
why don't you correct the schedule for everyone? Say the whole name for everyone.
Awesome, Bryce. Thanks for having me. My name's Joshua Poitras. That's how you say it.
There you go.
Super simple.
And you're zooming in from?
I am speaking from Drake, Massachusetts.
Nice, nice. So
guide, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to get into here, but you know, with the real estate that you're doing, you know, you're really, as we talked before the show, you're stepping into the next part of your journey. But let's rewind the tape a little bit and tell me, how did you get started in this crazy game of real estate?
I went to Afghanistan in 2010, 11. I was in Afghanistan, came home, got a job on my hometown fire department.
Mm-hmm.
And so my schedule with the fire department is one day on, 3 days off. So I work about 2 24-hour shifts a week. And so this leaves a lot of time in between for extracurricular activities. So a lot of the guys on the side, most of the firefighters in my, or all around the nation do real estate because it's such, has a flexible schedule, and it's part, you know, you can do it part-time. And you can kind of control your, you know, control how you want to play the game. So I chose real estate.
I know a few fire guys, because the schedule, you know, if you're someone at home thinking you can do it or not, sorry to interject, but the schedule is perfect. If you have a 3 on, 4 off, if you're one of those people who gets a little bit of leeway, it's the 9 to 5ers that have it really hard. But so you're working at the fire department. And a lot of guys are doing that, is what you're saying? Most fire guys have real estate investments,
well,
or they're thinking about it?
We have a few, a lot of the guys, most of the guys are contractors. There are a few realtors. It's starting to become, I think, more of a common trend just because such real estate is such a trendy topic right now. But I got into it just thinking I'd be doing a few deals here, a few deals there. Just to kind of supplement my income. And I had met a client, you know, when you first starting out being a real estate agent, you're just dying for business, right? So I had a young kid who I befriended, who we actually ended up partnering on my first phase of my real estate investment career. He, back when real estate investment was starting to come up, I don't know if you remember Armando Montalago. He was the
sounds
first
familiar, yeah.
The first, if you watched ATV back in the day, it was the first Flip My House series.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Spanish,
Yeah. I think that's
Arizona,
where the name.
Long Spanish hair. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Good dude. So he does, nationwide seminars, right?
Yeah.
So he
yep.
does a thing called a bus tour. And basically his job is to funnel. He funnels in people through his bus tour series, and they start, of course, with the introductory seminar. So my client was like, dude, I want to flip houses. I'm like, all right. I know it's the whole trendy thing. Everybody wants to flip
yeah,
houses.
It's,
like
it's the weekend after the seminar and your phone's off the hook. Like, I'm looking for a deal. Guilty as charged. I've been part of the seminar circuit. So guilty as charged, but it does get people taking action. So your phone's ringing off. The realtors love it. The week after the seminar rolls through town, and the guy calls you up.
Guys, you know, they sell you the pieces. They got me calling credit cards, raising amounts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we they know it all.
Yep.
So me and my buddy, of course, I want to keep my client, right? So I'm like, all right, I'll go. So I go along for the ride. I go through through the sales seminar, whatever. And he's like, all right, well, let's go to the bus store. And I'm like, what? He's like, let's go to the bus store. I'm like, dude, it's $20,000 to go to the bus store. He's like, well, we'll put our credit cards together. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll split it. 10 and 10.
Like, why am I spending $10,000 to go on showings in another part of the country? So, anyways, they ended up cutting it in half. We got two seats for 10,000. Went down there. That
What
was
a deal. You negotiated the name of the, they don't do
Jesus.
that for anyone else either.
God, man, it is
They got
crazy.
you in it. But here's the thing. Don't take that, like, we both understand the mechanics of what's happening, but sometimes it takes that investment in yourself to really take it seriously, to open your eyes to the possibilities. That bus tour does change perspective. I understand why they do it, because you're looking at stuff, it's real. You know, sometimes you go to the seminar, you sit there and it's like, yeah, whatever, these houses don't exist. And then they put you on the bus, they drive you to the house and like, this is that house, or these are houses like that. So you go to
Well,
the bus tour with them. Where did you go? Where did the
it
tour go?
wasn't even that. You should have seen the network I got from it for that $10,000. It was insane. The money, the access to the funding I got was absolutely insane. And the best part of it is they're training everybody on the same system. So you get entered, and this was like in 2015, 2016, 2014. You all into the same group. You picking that up? Ma, I am on a podcast right now, please.
Okay,
That's so classic.
Milo,
Ma, I'm on a podcast. Ma, all right. We're gonna leave this
Milo.
part in. So
I
you're
got an
on the
in-law apartment,
tour.
but she floats over from time to
So
time.
you're on the bus tour and you get a bunch of connection with people, and you probably have the class of the local real estate group, maybe 5 or 10 of you guys who invested in yourselves to actually learn the systems and get into it. And so then you come back to town.
So, well, we go down there, and Armando teaches in some creative ways. And it was basically the 70% rule, and it was basically pounding the 70% rule into your head. And you learn everything from renovation costs, their renovation costs, which tended to be a little bit different when I got started here. And you put it all together at the end. And you use fun games and stuff, and they had a dance contest. So, a little beknownst to me, my client, my friend, was like an insane dancer, like Michael Jackson level dancer. Okay. And won the dance contest flat out. Armando fell in love with this kid. And his prize was just being invited back to the seminar. So we were invited back to the seminar month after month after month. I mean, we got 12, 13, 14, 15 months of it was
Retraining,
probably
training, networking.
training a hundred. There's at least 100 people in that room every time, every weekend. So probably
So
more.
15,000 connections, 1,500 connections. Yeah,
And
1,500.
by the end of it, we're teaching the 70% rule. So like, because now we know it so well, we're just obviously trying to help out and trying to get everyone on the same system. So everyone's on the same system. Everyone's talking the same language. And now we can, it makes it a lot easier to exchange money and look at deals together. And everyone's on the same level. And it was really, really, really an awesome, part, awesome to be part of. So I took what I knew from there. And then now I'm like seeing a way for me to get rich, right? So I'm like, this is my way out. This is my way out. I take what I learned from there and I try to apply. I bring it back to Boston. I was living in Dorchester at the time with my brother. He was going to Mass Boston. And during 2015, there was a lot of REOs coming on the market. And so what the strategy was basically buy an REO, for the right price, get it lower from the bank, and then renovate it, clean it up, and then resell it for market price, right? And so instead of taking it slow, I don't like to take things slow. I like to go all in. And I probably went all in too fast. And next thing you know, I had five REO projects on my hands. And
Because there was a few kicking around, and sometimes it's, we all pick our poison when it comes to real estate, right?
yeah, I mean, there's so many strategies to be used. This was just my entry strategy. And
So how did that go?
it was tough. It started off good. Banks like to price high and slowly drop over long periods of time.
Yeah, they've got
So
a schedule.
yeah. So you're kind of You're victim to their schedule, but the great thing about dealing with banks is they're super easy to negotiate credits with because they're logical. And you bring a case to them. And for instance, the first one, 55 Navarre Street, Roslindale, had a bunch of code violations. And I wish I wasn't so young at the time because I would have beat them up more. But it's very easy to just give them the inspection report and say, hey, look, this repair is documented. I need this much. This repair is documented this much. This, and like 99% of the time, I get an email back. Okay, all set, price reduction or price credit. No argument, no crying, no nothing.
Yeah, that was my favorite part. Whenever I'm buying like a bank repossession, I look at the time on market and I know exactly the day and the discount schedule and when I can buy it for. I just wait. I'm like, yeah, talk to you next week on Tuesday at 7 o'clock in the morning. As soon as that offer hits the right schedule, it's pretty much yours. So they're just like, yeah, they're just completely unemotional about the sale. They just want. They have an obligation to their lenders to try to get the price according to the schedule. And if you know the schedule, then it's pretty easy to acquire those things. I remember I had the same thing. I think I think we took in like three at the same time back in like 20, I think it might have been 2017. Somehow I'm buying these bank repossessions and I have three or four of them in a row right at the same schedule. And they're not that bad. They're not that beat, but they're not, the price wasn't super great. I felt like I was always pressing the after repair value. I was like, oh, I could probably squeeze an extra 10 grand out of it. And then when the dust settled, it was me that got squeezed the extra 10 grand and I didn't end up seeing much. I think we made maybe 15 or 17 on one of them, and the other ones were just like 5 grand or something, I think it was a composition of things. So how did the five go? What was the biggest challenge in taking on five at a time, you'd say?
I would say, finding deals and finding money is difficult, but once you have your systems down, you can get it. I think it's dealing with contractors is the most difficult thing in real estate investing by far. And at that time, there was no, that time I was using Craigslist and, I was, my margins were so slim because, you're competing with other people on the market. I'm hungry. I want to get into it, but the only way I know how to. And now my budgets are off because my budget prices were based off Arizona and not Massachusetts. And, even though they told me, oh no, this price applies everywhere. This price applies, but no, it doesn't.
Yeah, you can sort of get it, but that's one thing I would always tell people when they would sign up as a student. It's like, this is the rate card for this market. Go and talk to contractors and get them to fill in the rate card in their market. Then you can be more accurate with your estimation. Yeah, they're in the ballpark, but the reality is sometimes things, labor is different, demand is different. Material shortages or whatever it may be can change that rate card re really, really quick.
Yeah,
So,
with them, it always works better for me to look at it like, basically, all right, this is what I need done. How much is it gonna take from me to get you to do what I need you to do? And if it's too much, I can't work with you. You know what I mean? So, I
Like,
never
can you
look
fit in the
at it.
box?
Yeah, I never
I got
look at
20
it.
grand to fix this house. Are you in? And they're like, nah, it's too little. Or some guy's hungry enough. And that's the thing that I found. And maybe you can comment on your experience is that there's always a guy who's hungry enough to do it for 20 grand, but you might not like the way it looks after,
And that was what I was running into on
And the problem
Craigslist.
is on flips, that can hurt. Like if it was a rental, okay, cool. Like tenants are tenants, but on a flip, and the quality isn't there, like you better hope your market is hot.
And they don't they have you have to get them on the same scope of repairs too. You know what I mean? You guys gotta be on the same page because you might want all this and this and this. And he's like, yeah, I do it for 20 grand. And the repairs are totally different than what you're expecting. So, I would just say having a good contract, a good scope of work, a good agreement, good benchmarks, and pay schedules with contractors is huge. Huge to have.
Holdbacks
And that
too. Make sure you got a hold back on that, on
always
that.
10%.
Yeah. Well,
And
we were
then they
doing
know
seven
that.
and a half, but 10% sounds even better after my
Yeah.
experience. 10% hold back. I like that.
I think
So
every contractor has come to me and said they're finished with $10,000 worth of a punch list left.
yeah,
<That's>...
no, we're let's get in there with the red. I always bring in blue painter's tape when they're not, and they finish on like a Friday. I go in the blue painter's tape and I hit everything. So they come in, the house is just littered with these things. And they're like, what's this? They call me first thing in the morning, Monday. What's going on? You're like, take a look. Everywhere there's a blue thing is a problem. And if you can't see that there's a problem where the blue tape lies, that's a problem. You know,
Exactly.
get it fixed. The tap's not screwed down. The window doesn't open. There's scuff marks all the way up and down the banister. Like you clearly become blindly biased to your own project. So, flip through a bunch of things. What was the end result of that pipeline, and what did you learn?
So, the first four deals, like you said, I learned to be a lot very creative with repairs. Learn to be flexible and to change scopes of repairs. Be careful what you change halfway through because it may be costing you more. But also just like, for instance, filing permits, I learned that you may want to be a little more specific on your permit and not just write gut rehab on the paper, on the application, because
Yeah, that's
then
everything. They're
you'll
like, oh, it's a
go.
gut rehab. I'm gonna check the insulation under the crawl space for you.
The I did gut rehab, like a bonehead, and it was a three family in Boston, and
Oh
they have a
no.
city ordinance. The sprinklers are automatically triggered on any more than 50% of drywall removed, and I
That
didn't know
sounds
that.
expensive. All
Yeah,
the sprinklers, like that's a huge expense.
that
Wiring
was.
it through, drilling all the holes, putting all the pipe, the material alone to pipe that up is, I don't know, three family, let me guess, $17,000.
Exactly. Yeah. Back in the day, it was all PEX too. It wasn't anything special. So,
Oh, wow. Yeah, that.
yeah. Back then it was 17. Right now, nowadays, it's probably like 25, 30.
Yeah.
It's insane.
So
It's
what?
insane, especially with all the fire codes.
So after all the dust settled on that whole pipeline, what year is it and what did you learn?
Well, the last deal is when it rocked my world. The fifth house. I bought a house. It was in Dedham, Massachusetts, which is a higher scale neighborhood. It was an odd house. It was like a French architecture, a French architect built it. It was really weird. It was like, it was the I call it the white elephant. You know what I mean? 'Cause it's rare. Oh, it's worth a lot. And it's not, nobody wanted it. So,
Yeah, it's rare in a bad way, maybe.
yeah. So I bought that house. For a good price, put in repairs into it, and I couldn't sell it for what I need to get out from under it. And I had a contractor. I didn't do a contract with him. He decided that I owed him more than what I thought I owed him. So that was one thing. So now he sued my LLC. So thank God I had an LLC. And it was funny because I had an anonymous LLC, and the lawyer couldn't figure out who owned it. So it was just like names, like 50 million names that he could think of everyone who was involved in the lawsuit. So between that I couldn't get what I needed from the market, and the builder wouldn't agree to a smaller thing, so I couldn't get a short sale, so I couldn't get out from under it. So unfortunately, this became my learning, my lesson learned, and
Yeah, the stepping stone.
yeah, I had to let it go. I had to make that phone call. That was so fearful to make. To call a private investor and tell them, hey, it's we can't sell it. Your money's stuck in the house. And so that rocked my world. I took everything.
Did you sell it short?
I tried to sell it short. I couldn't. I told the hard money lender, I said, listen, man, I got no more money left. I can't sell the property for what I need for it. I can't make the mortgage payments anymore. Of course, he was very angry, but it is part of the business. So The contractor had a large lien on it. He wanted me to get rid of the lien. I said, I can't, I don't have money. I can't sell the house. Because all the other projects before that had been, breaking even, a little high, a little low, whatever, and kind of just been funneling the money from those into this, trying to save this deal. And just walked away from it. I had to. And I called the private investor. I said, listen, this is a bad deal. Can't do it. I have every intention of making payments to you to pay back your capital over the time. And now I've since paid her back the full capital for that deal. The hard money lender took it. He did, I think he changed like one floor and made one repair and was able to sell it for like, he's in it 70% loan to value. So he did really well. And he was able to sell it for like just over what I needed to sell it prior. So he ended up getting out of it. But the
Yeah, and
problem was,
you ate the hard money loan from the investor.
right, I hate the personal money
You know what
investor.
hurts the
So,
most? Paying monthly for a house that you don't even get to keep. Man, I
that
remember
is
one I stepped on a landmine. I'm like, this is a good neighborhood. This is a good deal. It's a kind of a weird house. I made some bad renovation decisions in there, and it ended up costing me like $40,000 in short. So, you can't win them all. It's the odds are 7 wins, 2 break evens, and 1's usually a loss. So in every 10 deals, just hope to mitigate your losses so that they're not like mine, 40 grand, 50 grand on this deal. It takes a lot. It takes a while. It took like 2 years to pay that person back, but pay them back and
yeah.
you keep fighting and you make it up in the next inning, right?
That's it, man. You have to, I, you have to, I think, bad things do happen in real estate. Money does get lost, but you have to have that kind of character that you're willing to tell people the truth and be transparent about the situation
That's
and
huge.
owning up. If you made the bad decision and you own up to it, it is what it is. And then you'll have to, game plan, come up with some plans with that personal money investor to figure out how you're gonna mitigate those losses, right? So,
Yeah, let's talk about, I have a question I'm going to ask you a little later, but let's let that sit in, and we'll talk about what are you doing now? You survived the storm. What are you doing now?
My credit was beat to shit. I was having a hard time at my W-2 job. I was basically going through like the toughest part of my life trying to pull all the financial pieces back together. And then I slowly got myself back on my financial footing back, got my credit back to normal. Got most of my, actually, all my bills paid. I went and got a master's degree because the military paid for it. So I used that to pay back. So I got the degree, but I used the money I got back from the military to pay back another investor. So, and kind of just took my time to kind of put myself back together and put my head back in the right spot. And I got back into the real estate game, thinking that I'd probably never do real estate investments again. I ran into a person I work with now. His name is John Bombacci for Candor Realty Group in Lowell, Massachusetts. But he is an investor-heavy real estate brokerage. Now, what I knew was, this type of sale and this niche, I knew this niche. Although I wasn't successful the first time, maybe I knew it. That's how I knew real estate. Whether I, wanted to or not, that's just how I knew it. And so that company ended up being a good fit for me. And it was actually probably the best decision I ever made because I went and, joined that realty group. And a big foundation of our realty group is the net monthly networking meetings. And I was able to regrow my network, regrow my,
Confidence.
confidence, connect with people who have been in that situation. And I was getting more and more confident slowly of getting back into the investment game. Just having people in the same
Yeah,
same
there's a
route
little
as
bit of
you.
like a AA element to going to networking events. Sometimes you're like, hey, my name's Bryce and I'm a real estate investor. Hi, Bryce. So like everyone has these problems, you know. A lot of times you see on
I'm Josh
social
and I'm
media and stuff.
over-leveraged.
Yeah. Hi. Hi, Josh. I've been over leveraged for 9 months now. And but you know, like there is a certain amount of reality that kicks in when you realize that it's not like it is on TV. The HGTV numbers aren't real. Like there's carrying costs and stuff that they don't account for. They're like, oh, we made $120,000 profit. Okay, how much was the hard money loan? How much was the closing cost? What's the carrying cost? So
What do you owe your personal investor?
yeah, and so
What are the
when you
splits?
look at it all the way through, so you're running these networking events now, and how long you been running these, hosting these events?
It's been about 2 years. I do the Manchester meetup. Was formerly at the XO Bistro in Manchester. I'm now moving it to the 603 Brewery in Derry, New Hampshire. We'll be kicking that off on January 25th. And I have I have a small following. I have some regulars that show up repeatedly, which is great. And I'm always getting new people in. A lot of people I help get started initiating their portfolio. Mostly, 95% of the time I'm helping people house hack the right property. And I've even gotten a joint venture deal. So I've gotten a couple of joint venture partners out of the monthly meetup as well. And the great thing is I'm part of several meetups. So there's about we do about 9 meetups a month, and I attend all the other meetups too. So I have, 8, 9 meetups worth of connections every month to go through. So I would definitely say, man, real estate networking, like networking in real estate is paramount. Like I think that's the difference between being successful and not being successful is definitely having the support network behind you.
Yeah. Well, you need someone to lean on, and a lot of times we can feel a little isolated because it is kind of a solopreneur business. And so you do need to have a little bit of community around you to, feel like you're not just at it alone. It can easily feel like you're just flipping houses by yourself, surrounded by your own team, surrounded by your own contractors and your own things. And it's like, am I really connected with anyone, or am I just this guy running around in my car drinking way too much coffee? It's just easily we can become that. So, on that note, let's connect you with a few more people. If people want to connect with you, they want to find out more about your story and what you're working on now. Before we get to that, let's touch on the last piece there, that right now you're doing a raise for a multifamily building.
So, well, right now I own, 17. I've built back up to 17 doors, personally on
Nice.
my own. So I'm constantly managing those. I try to limit my time in those properties, but I literally had a 20 building portfolio fall on my lap, of an older gentleman who's looking to retire in March.
There you go.
And it's pretty much all in the same city, and it's all on the most important points of interest within that city. This guy's been managing it for 20 years. Most of the apartments are in great condition. And I'm looking to raise about 2 million. That includes the reserve fund, by the end of March to close on this 82 unit deal in Western Massachusetts. It'll be North Adams, Massachusetts, one of the smaller
Nice.
cities in Massachusetts. It's an old mill town. Old Victorian mill town. So,
There you go.
I'm no stranger to mill towns. I'm from Lowell. I grew up in Lowell, but a lot of mill towns are multifamily heavy, and I just tend to spend a lot of time in them. So.
Yeah. Well, let's throw it out to the room there and say, if people want to find out more about what you're up to, connect with you, what should they do? How do they find you?
If you want to connect with me, you can reach out to me, DM me on Instagram. My handle is at Josh Poit, so JOSHPOIT. You can even email me. I'm all over the internet. I'm on Google, Bigger Pockets. Message me through Bigger Pockets. You can find me on Facebook as well. Just send me a message. I'll connect and we can get on texting terms or we can meet in person. I will be recording my power pitch for this deal pretty soon, so I'll be posting that up on my Instagram. But if you'd like to get down to the nitty-gritty details, just message me and I'd love to sit down. I can walk you through the whole deal. And if it's something that you think you might be interested in, please, I'd love to have a soft commitment. I'd love to have my soft commitments met by January 31. And that's the target I'm trying to meet. So.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you stopping by. That there's a lot of similarities between how you got started and how I got started. So, yeah, really appreciate your time and good luck with the capital raise as you move towards acquiring more doors.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
No problem. And until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode.